Hello and welcome to Politically Enraged, a podcast made for the lefties amongst us. Politically Enraged is a podcast about politics, both British and further afield, and a place to talk about society and how it needs to be improved for everyone. You can find us on Twitter at Political Rages, Instagram at Politically Enraged. You can sponsor the show on Ko-fi, or you can follow my personal socials. I'm Davey Moo, across all social media, and I'm here to talk to real people about real problems and work out how we move forward. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to Politically Enraged, the Lefties Refuge. Today I have a very special guest with me. Her name is Gemma Clark. She is a teacher in Scotland and she's also an abortion rights hero who is going to be talking not only about Roe v. Wade, but also about the wider issues that are going to come from this ruling. It's obviously touching on some very important topics, and it's important that people that can get pregnant are the ones that lead on this conversation. I think that people like me need to shut up, sit back, platform, and listen. And what's coming is only the start.
I've been thinking about it for ages, and for a really long time I felt like, oh, you know, I'll just sit here and make videos and then that'll be it. And then as things have gotten further and further, like, everything's gotten more weird and my platform's just like exploded recently. I was like, you can't just sit here and just talk about this anymore. You've got to start doing it. And so there's loads of stuff behind the scenes that I'm working on, and I'm like dying to talk about it, but if I can't, because if it comes out, the stuff that's going on, we're screwed. And so it's so weird to have to be all cloak and dagger about all the activism that you're doing. It drives you mad. But then when you actually get to see the payoff, which we just have with the by-elections and stuff, and you'll get it when you get everything through, you're like, yeah. Oh my god, this is the best feeling ever.
Yeah,
it's amazing. But yeah, so how long do you think it'll take until you actually see the payoff then? Because I've assumed it's got to go through meetings and stuff.
Yeah, local meeting will be kind of late summer this year, and then the AGM will be kind of like coming up to June next year.
Yeah.
So it'll take a while, but hopefully it'll get passed through. I mean, I already know a lot of union members who will second the motions, so yeah, hopefully we'll get it through. Yeah. It's the EIS, they're Scotland's biggest teaching union, and they're quite, you know, they're really progressive and they're into anti-racism, LGBT inclusion, so I think it will get through. Most of the members are pretty progressive.
I'd hope so, especially because this is such an important topic, and with everything that's happening right now as well, like, it's just never been more important, has it? Because I think one of the weirdest things for me is seeing so many, not so many because there aren't so many, but like seeing a few people whose rights have literally just been taken away in America that are like, yeah, this is good, I want this. And yeah, I don't, you just don't ever want that, do you?
Instantly going back to laws before the 1970s. I think it's Massachusetts that automatically go back to like a 1920s law.
Yeah. It's the heartbeat law in Orlando, is it? Where it's
Texas,
that's it.
I think.
Texas, yeah. And then one of my favorite things that I saw today, it was a provocative title on purpose, but there was a guy who was debating a bunch of people, and he put banning abortion is Sharia law, and loads of people were like, no, it's nothing to do with Sharia law. And he was like, well, literally the Taliban give women the option to have abortions, so you actually have less rights under this government than you do under the Taliban.
Yeah,
and it's like,
realize that the Taliban laws are actually better than the Texan laws.
It's absolutely insane. And it's the most ironic thing is that people don't understand that any type of fundamentalism is scary, because it's like Christian fundamentalism is this, and then like Muslim fundamentalism is what the Taliban offer. Like, both of those things are bad. Things should be tempered. And it's like, I've just watched that Anna Kasparian thing that she did a while ago, where she was like shouting about the Bible and saying, like, you be religious, have your religious rights, have your decisions, that's fine, you do you, but your beliefs do not ever get to impact on what I do with my body. And we've just seen that in America it does.
Exactly. Freedom from religion.
Yeah.
America is pretty much just a theocracy now.
It really is. It's been heading that way for a long time, and it's really scary, isn't it?
Yeah, and the impact that we're seeing here, and we'll probably talk about that as well, particularly in Scotland. I mean, we're really getting some of the backlash from this. You know, yeah. We can see the signs of it starting over here. They're emboldened.
That's the frightening thing. I don't know if you saw, but Lord Moylan was on LBC today saying that it's a great victory because it's, you know, like, decisions are being handed back to elected politicians. And it's like, the Supreme Court aren't elected by the people, they're elected by the president, and the president that elected them lost the popular vote. When you
And
say
I've
it
been
out
listening to
loud.
American podcasts to understand the situation in Trump. It is on the record as being pro-choice, but when he realized that he could get the evangelical vote, he changed his, you know, he changed his mind about it, and he promised to get these judges into the Supreme Court to get their vote.
One of the I mean, it's not funny right now, but when I originally saw it was really funny because he'd gone to an anti-abortion rally in 2019, I think it was, and he'd as he always does, gaffed up his words. He was supposed to say "torn from the mother's womb," but what he actually said was, "Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month." And it's like, yeah, that's called birth, but
Such an idiot. Dangerous idiot, though.
and that's the thing, you know. I think when we saw him elected, we knew what it fomented, because he was obviously an issue, but we've seen with Biden that the president is essentially a figurehead and basically shit. But that he wasn't the danger. It was everything he was going to do that was going to have these long-reaching consequences, and here we are. And I think when it comes to people that stand with people that have these rights taken away from them, the question now is, what the hell do you do?
I know. I think we'll talk about this as we go on, but I think we need to not give up hope because there are things that we can do, and I think we need to hold on to that and concentrate on the things that we can do.
In particular, what do you suggest then? Because I think this is the main thing. Like, we need to look at the practicalities. And I know that a lot of people have been sharing stuff that you can do, but like, is there anything in particular you suggest immediately?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that we can do. I mean, we can attend protests, we can write to our MSPs. In Scotland, we've had a lot of these problems with these anti-choice protesters outside clinics, and it's been quite horrific. It has been over 100 at one of our local hospitals. There have been men with megaphones and body cameras filming women shouting about things like rape outside of a clinic in Glasgow where rape victims are referred to. But we can write to our MSPs and hold them accountable. If we get a supportive reply, you can post that on social media. There was an MSP who replied to someone today. He's one of the Forced Birth Brigade in the government. So I think share that, call him out. Can also write to newspapers. I've given myself a challenge to try and keep getting a letter about buffer zones into national newspapers. So I've got about four so far, and I'm going to keep going, just keeping getting that message out. And I think, you know, retweet things, sign things, share protests. You don't even need to have a big following. If everybody shared these things, retweeted, followed people like the Back Off Scotland campaign. I know there are similar campaigns in England. I know Bournemouth are having trouble with anti-choice protesters. Follow these campaigns, support them, share the message. I've taken to writing things in chalk where the anti-choice protesters go, just things like about buffer zones, clinic harassment. That's quite effective because everybody who walks past something written in chalk, they will stop and look at it to see what it says. So that helps to get a message out. Yeah, so just calling out your MSPs, holding them accountable. Something else I also did that was effective, there's a consultant at one of the hospitals in Glasgow who wrote a letter to the Women's Health Minister, and he got lots of other consultants to sign it. So that was good. He also made a video of himself confronting protesters outside the hospital. So me and him know each other on Twitter. And I've noticed that there's very little about the buffer zone campaign in Scotland being shared on TikTok. So I thought, well, I'll share some things there. It's another platform, kind of cross-pollinate a bit. So I messaged him and I said, do you mind if I put your video on TikTok? And he said, yeah, sure. And it blew up. It's had over a quarter of a million views so far. So, and a lot of people saying, oh, I didn't know about this. What can I do? And I've spent hours replying to people, fill in the buffer zone consultation, write to the MSP. So there's things that all of us can do. It's really easy to be downhearted, but we've all got things that we can do. And if we all do it collectively, you know, we can make a difference.
That is the key. And I think that I had this internal discussion with myself recently about like armchair activism, and it is easy to sit and just make videos and all things like that. But when it comes to what's actually happening, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just part of it. Like, anything that you do is good. It's better than nothing. But one thing that I'd really like to see, because you know, Christian fundamentalism has been a big problem in certain parts of America for a long time, but here it isn't really. We don't really have that many people that are that strongly religious. I think the time has come for people that understand how important and fundamental these rights are to do the right thing. We know that these people will go and harass people outside of hospitals. And I'm not saying go and start violence, because don't do that. What's the point in legitimizing it? But just going and standing in solidarity with people that need it, make an anti-buffer zone and make sure that they're too scared to get anywhere near the places where these things are happening, because those people are emboldened because they don't get stood up to, except by people that have to do it because they work there or because they need those services. If I find out that there's somewhere where I can go and stand, I'll bloody go and stand there. And I'm hardly big myself, but you know, if it gives someone the solidarity to know that they can get in there safely, I'm going to do it. And I don't see why other people won't and shouldn't.
Yeah, and I think the point you make about social media, I mean, that really is part of it now. And I think any campaign that's not effectively using social media, you're missing a really big opportunity to get your message out there. So I think the protests on the streets are important as well. I think, you know, the more forms of activism you use, the better, the more impact that it has. There has been a lot of people in Glasgow talking about counter-protests, and some experts think it's not always the best thing because it gives these people this spectacle that they want. And people accessing the clinic, they just see a crowd, you know, and they can't really tell who's who, and it can be intimidating for them. But the men who target the rape clinic in Glasgow in particular are very loud. They have megaphones, they're filming people. So in that situation, it's very effective to turn up and drown them out, stand in their way. That's definitely very effective. But it's also such a hard balance as well, because you don't want to play into their game, give them the spectacle that they want, and then let them make themselves the victims, because they're always saying, oh, this is our freedom of speech, and we are just having a peaceful prayer vigil, and our rights are being taken away, and we are being persecuted. So you don't want to feed into that and let them have that narrative, and then the media might try both sides something that shouldn't be both sides. It's a very radicalised and extremist view. I think it really should be seen as radicalisation. If you are so indoctrinated that you think it's okay to stand outside a rape clinic and shout at women, something has went seriously wrong. You've been really terribly radicalised. And I think it's time to view it as such and call it that.
There's a lot of intersectionality between things like the far right, the Christian fundamentalists, the anti-trans crowd and stuff. And that intersection's never more clear than now. For example, Kathleen Stock is one of the more prominent anti-trans people in the UK. And she yesterday, one of the first things she did, the first time she acknowledged what happened with Roe v. Wade, was to say, well, I've got friends that are anti-choice and I support them. And it's like, you say that you're like pro-woman, pro-women's rights, a feminist, and this is the thing that you say. And my favourite thing that I saw today that just absolutely blew my mind, I'm going to find it because it's just unbelievable. But there's an anti-trans protester here, and this is what she's literally written on the internet. What is there to say? Access to abortions were a necessary casualty in our fight against erasure from trans people. Stop talking for and over women. We have a job to do. And it's like, You've lost a right because you joined hands with people that don't want you to have access to abortions, because it gives legislators the ability to control women's bodies, and by a larger extent, transgender people's bodies. They're going to come after gay marriage, and this spreads as well. We've seen, you know, America elected a far-right despot. We elected a far-right despot. These things spread, and the worry is it must be fought and contained away from here. We also have to help Americans, but we have to do stuff here to prevent the spread, because it will happen.
Absolutely, because it affects us here. And that comment, I saw that comment, and if ever you needed proof that these people are not feminists, and they never have been, that is that, you know, if you don't care about abortion rights, you're not a feminist. We've had in Scotland, we've had a lot of support from transgender activists with regard to buffer zone campaigns. They've been absolutely brilliant, arranging rallies. And some of the, I refuse to call them TERFs because they're not feminists and there's nothing radical about them. It's just plain old bigotry. So transphobes turned up and they were more interested in trying to harass trans activists than they were about the abortion rights and buffer zones, you know, the issue that we were actually meant to be there about. They were more interested in scoring points over trans activists than they were about the whole abortion issue. And actually, it's funny that you should mention Kathleen Stock. I actually hadn't heard of her, but a teacher I know was trolled by her. She's tried to dogpile him. He's had to lock his account. She's kind of, you know, when you're a teacher, you're very easily threatened by being told that you're not suitable for your job and that you're a danger. There's been sort of insinuations like that made as well. It is absolutely vile. He opened his phone and she'd retweeted him, done her dog whistle, and they all came. They're very, very dangerous.
It's really, really disturbing. And I think the funny thing is, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I'll try not to go off on a massive tangent because this is all about what you're saying and what you do. But like, I've had this really weird transformative 48 hours where yesterday I listened to a really long Spaces that was full of black and brown women in America that were talking about how this change is going to fundamentally affect their lives. And one after the other, young ones, middle-aged ones, all these women, and then a couple of non-binary people and one trans person was like, I will fight to my death for this because this is my life. We already experience disproportionate rates of poverty. I'm desperately poor. If I get pregnant, I can't afford an abortion anyway. Now I'm legally not allowed to get one. I can't even get as far as to get one. There was one person that explained that when she was pregnant, it was ectopic and it damaged her body so badly, even though she had the abortion, that if she gets pregnant again, and the same thing happens and she can't get another abortion to save her life, it will just kill her. And mm-hmm. So all of these people telling these stories, and it was like, I realized that this, what you don't see, it, and I'm calling out my own privilege here, obviously, as a man, as a cis man and blah, blah, blah. There's so many people that have been fighting this fight for such a long time. Obviously you're part of that. They're a massive part of that. And other people have had the privilege of ignoring that, and that can't happen anymore. So I think the best thing that we can do is, for me, it's like, shut up, David, and listen to people like you and listen to people like them, which is why I'm like, if you want to go on a spiel about this and how it's going to affect you or how it's going to affect anybody else or like what to do or anything, just tell me. And you've got however long it is that you need to speak about this, because that's what's important.
Yeah, but I think as well, it's also good that you're using your platform to amplify these voices, because we're not going to win this on our own. We need men to step up. They need to get involved. This isn't just a women's issue. This affects all of us. And I understand the view where a lot of people say that it's not useful to talk about the extreme cases of rape and threat to life. But I think there is still a need for that, because it's amazing how many people don't realise that ectopics can be lethal. And if you don't get an abortion, you will die. I think a lot of people still don't understand that. But also it's important for people to understand that you don't need to, your life to be in danger. You don't need to have been raped. It is enough to just say, I'm not just a uterus. I'm a human being and I don't want to make this choice. I do not want to be pregnant and I want to end it. And that's perfectly valid as well. I think we really, really need education, not just in schools, in general. The general public need much better education on pregnancy and on abortion and about what is actually going on. People also seem to think that late abortions are happening as if people are just like waiting 5 months and going, I think I'll just have an abortion. That's very, very rare. And these things happen usually because something terrible and tragic has happened. You know, this is a woman who's in Malta who's had to be airlifted to Mallorca. Her and her husband really wanted that pregnancy, but it is going to kill her if she doesn't get treatment.
It's insane. I was reading about that yesterday, and again, it made me feel a little bit nauseous. And it's like, I have a friend who, when she was pregnant, she got, what's it called? Gravidarum. And she basically had to lie down for 4 months of her pregnancy. I have a friend who, she got osteoporosis that was brought on by the fact that her baby was taking up a lot of her calcium. And people don't understand the fundamental changes that pregnancy brings to the body, like the things it does, the levels it changes, the hormones it changes, the sickness it can bring on. My sister, when she went into labor, something bad happened and she ended up having to lie down on the bathroom floor with a towel underneath her, hoping desperately that my brother-in-law would get back in time for her not to bleed to death. Like, that's pregnancies that came to term, but like, there's so many reasons that they can't, that they shouldn't. And I think another thing, like you just said, that just, it like blows my mind, is that people are just like 19 years old and got drunk at a college party or whatever and slept with the boyfriend that they thought were amazing. And now you need to give up your entire life until you're, what, 36, so that you can raise a child that you don't have the money for, that you don't have the space for, that you don't have the emotional capacity for. Why? What?
Exactly. As if, well, that is your punishment and you deserve that punishment.
You literally get less time in prison.
Yeah, exactly. There is so much ignorance around. I've actually just ordered the book about the Turnaway study that was done by the University of California, and it debunks so many myths. And I think one of the most important things it looked at, it was a longitudinal study of people who were turned away from an abortion who wanted one. And they looked at the issue of adoption. Now, I think if people want to go down that route, that is perfectly valid and they should be supported to do that if that's what they want. but nobody should be forced to do that. What they found was that people who were denied an abortion and coerced down the route of adoption, they really regretted not being allowed to have the abortion. They wish they'd been allowed to go with their first instinct. You know, it's peddled as if it's this sort of magic fairy dust option. Oh yes, just have the baby and you'll be able to put it up for adoption and some couple will be made so happy, it'll be their gift. And they have no thought about the mental and physical and psychological trauma, lifelong trauma that they could be inflicting on that person. It's just not right.
Even in addition to that as well, this is also hideous, and I don't want to do the like, well, if they're going to do this, then here's a concession. But like, if they're so determined to do this, they've done nothing to fix the care system in America. The care system in America is garbage. One of the things I was really interested in when I was in my second year of uni, just as a matter of course, back in the old days before stuff like, you know, Skype and things like that, I used to go on forums a lot. And just by complete accident, because I was asking questions about American adverts, about length and stuff, because I studied media, I ended up in this forum where a lot of kids that had been in care were talking amongst themselves, and I was just kind of there. And they were explaining, I'm not even going to go into it actually, because it's really grim, but like some of the stuff that happened to them in care, from abuse, both physical and sexual, to emotional abuse, to just feeling completely abandoned, and the fact that it was overstuffed and all these things. And they're like, just put your baby up for adoption into a system that doesn't frigging work.
It just shows how little they know and how little they actually care about children the minute that they're born. They don't care about them.
That's the other thing as well, because, you know, like one of my, like I both love and hate it, but there's a billboard that always gets trotted out at things like pro-choice rallies and stuff, where it says, oh, you're all for protecting the child's rights until it's gay or transgender or disabled or another woman or blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's so depressingly true, because you'll fight tooth and nail to make this woman carry a baby to term. The baby comes out and it's as gay as I am. And suddenly you've got preachers on American TV talking about how they want to shoot people like me in the head. And I'm not even paraphrasing. And then things like what happened last night happen, because there was a mass shooting in Norway of gay people. And I said on my podcast episode yesterday, I think it was, I am literally counting down the days until there is a mass shooting event that will be linked back to those speeches. And that's what these people continue to push.
Yeah, they are radicalized hate preachers, and we should have as much contempt for them as the media have had, you know, for the hate preacher who had the hook hand. I mean, they're every bit as bad as him. They're exactly the same. There is no difference. I really believe that education is one way forward. That's why I've been to my trade union to try and get a motion pushed through for my union in Scotland to promote pro-choice, fact-based, health-focused abortion education in schools and to campaign for it. And I think girls, boys, I think young people of all genders need that education. I think girls and people who can get pregnant, first and foremost, I think they have a right to know, first of all, about contraception, how they can prevent a pregnancy. But we should all know through COVID, you can do all the right things. You can use your hand gel, you can wear your mask, you can do everything right, and you can still be unlucky. So the next thing they need to know that is that if you end up in that situation, what can you do? It's really important for them to understand that it's time sensitive. Like, what should you do? How can you get a pregnancy test? How do you interpret that? How long do you need to wait? What do you do next? Who do you need to contact? What support will you get? And I think also it's important for them to understand that it can be a very simple, straightforward procedure, and that it is very safe. I've got great concerns about, I don't know if you follow Vice World News, but they've exposed that an organisation called the SPUC, they call themselves the Society for the Protection of the Unborn Child. They have gone into lots of schools in the UK and in Scotland, and they peddle anti, you know, pro-life misinformation. And I think it is so wrong to allow girls to be subjected to that in school. I don't know why we're allowing this. That needs to stop. It's completely wrong. In Scotland as well, my union, and it was about 10 years ago now, but they did some research and they found that local authorities in Scotland are either not talking about abortion at all, or many, if they are talking about it, it's within the context of an RE lesson. That's not appropriate because it is a health matter. Now, I'm not against having these discussions about what is the Christian view on this, or do different sects have different views, and why do they have these views? What is the philosophical thought on when a fetus is a human? But that can't be the only discussion, and at the same time, deny girls especially the most basic information about their bodies and their rights and what would actually be involved for them if they had to go through with the pregnancy that they didn't want. So I really think education is a way forward, and I think young men especially need that education, because if not, they could easily be the radicalised men with the megaphones and the body cams standing outside of a rape clinic in Glasgow shouting at women. You know, everybody, all young people need this education.
That is the big problem. And I think, you know, the frustration with it is that all of those men, without exception, that do that kind of thing, they will never, ever, ever have to imagine what it is like to be in the position of someone that's going to that clinic. And again, it's like we were saying before, it doesn't matter why they're there. I mean, it does, but it doesn't matter why they're there, in terms of, it doesn't matter if it's because something is wrong and it's not going to come to term. It doesn't matter if it's her choice because she just literally can't afford it or whatever it is. It literally does not matter why that person has gone to that clinic. He can and never will understand what it is like to stand in her shoes. So why does he get to judge her and stand there and scream and shout? Because what does it do other than make someone feel like shit about a choice that they feel is best for them for the rest of their lives?
Yeah, exactly. And I know through the information that I've shared on TikTok, it's been really overwhelming. Some of the really personal things that people have shared, the reasons why they were at that hospital, what they were going through, what happened. And for anyone to think that they've got the right to take the hardest time in somebody's life and try and make them feel worse, it's just evil. And I think young men especially need to be educated that, you know, maybe if you have a girlfriend and she has a termination, you might feel sad about that, and it is okay to feel sad. But what is not okay is to try and force her to give birth against her will. You know, what is the lesser of two evils? You know, the idea of a pregnancy, because in early stages we are talking about bundles of cells, and you know, you can literally freeze embryos for decades and then implant it and then a baby is born. This, again, it's all the misinformation, all the heartbeat stuff. You can put heart cells in a petri dish and they will pulsate. That does not mean that there is a heart beating. It's all deliberately very misleading and very emotive.
I think it's always going to be, though, because, I mean, that's the irony again. It's the, like, oh, facts over feelings. And then you say, well, factually, that isn't a human being. That's not a human being yet. It's not termed as a human being until it has literally passed out. It's like, when you think about the process of it all, a fetus is like parasitizing off of a body until it's born. It can't stay alive unless the person that's hosting it stays alive. And sometimes it can take them with it if it doesn't come to term and stuff. It's like, that's an unbalanced relationship. And it's not fair to say to someone. I think the thing for me has always been that men in particular that weigh in on the, like, anti-choice side, you just don't get to say, I don't think you should have that right, regardless of how you feel about it. I don't care if you think it's murder, but my favorite thing to say is that these people are all the biggest gesture politics losers I've ever seen. Because if you actually believed that it was murder going on in those clinics, if you actually thought that children were being murdered in those clinics, would you stand outside with a sign shouting at people and smirking?
Exactly. You would be in there stopping it from happening. If you genuinely believe that was what was happening, you would not just be standing there with a sign. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's absolutely ridiculous to say that.
Absolutely.
You know, we talk about, you know, men can't experience that. Sometimes people use the analogy of forced vasectomies, and I find the idea of forcing someone to have a vasectomy disgusting. But even then, it's not a true equivalence, because it's a very straightforward, safe and very simple procedure that you recover from very quickly and can be reversed. So that still doesn't compare to forcing someone to give birth, especially a young girl. We're talking about children sometimes who need to have abortions, actual children who could actually be carrying their own sibling and have been raped. And there's just no compassion.
One of the, like, the highest ironies that I love to bring up as well is twofold, which is that they would try to develop male birth control, which meant that men could, like, have unprotected sex and they couldn't then pass conception. And first of all, the funding was, the drug that they found worked was similarly derived from, I think it was Viagra. They found it had three effects, depending on how it was manipulated. It gave men boners, it could help with headaches, and it could assist with high blood pressure. And they piled all that money into manipulating it so it would give Ben boners. And the other thing that's just so ironic, and I just can't wrap my head around it, is had they taken it down the birth control route en masse, because they did small scale studies, they realized that this male birth control came with some side effects, which included mood swings and, you know, headaches and pain and things like that.
Same literally symptoms the female one.
Same side effects that women go through. And they were like, no, we can't do that. And it's like,
it's unethical. We can't do that to human beings. Men are human.
Exactly. But this is the world that we grow up in. Because I follow Women's Equality Party, who I literally am obsessed with. And they were posting yesterday on Instagram that there's like 17 different designs of speculums. And we still use the same old metal, scratchy, painful one. Because we literally care more about tradition than we do about putting people that have vaginas through pain when we're examining them.
Yeah, exactly.
What is that?
And I mean, it was the same kind of mentality when the Supreme Court when the leak came out of the Supreme Court, people were more outraged about the leak than about what it was that was actually leaked. It's just mind blowing. I think it takes some real mental gymnastics to have that mindset. I don't understand these people at all.
I don't either. But do you know what one of my favourite things to drop in at this point of a conversation is as well? I am pro-choice. And I was almost aborted. My mum changed her mind in the clinic. The person was like, would you like to come through? And she changed her mind at that moment. And
I've heard you say that in your other podcast. It was really interesting.
It's so funny to me. It makes me laugh every single time because people will be like, what if it was you? And I'm like, it almost was. So what? I wouldn't be here. Maybe someone else would be. Maybe no one would be. But I wouldn't know nor care because I wouldn't be here. I would be in oblivion and it wouldn't matter and it wouldn't change. Sure, it would change what I've done and things like that. But that would be a completely different world. I'm here and now. And in this world, people that have been aborted or abortions that have taken place never come to term. And that's how the world works. There is no afterlife filled with people who were or could have been. That's not how it works. People that are here, and those things that never came to pass aren't. And I don't know why people look and go, well, it could have been you. And it's like, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't care.
People, if they're going to use that logic, they never look at the other side of the logic. When people are allowed to control when they have children, if they've been allowed to make the choice to have an abortion and then later go on to have children, the children they had probably would not be here if they hadn't been allowed to have an abortion when they needed to. And they never think about, if they're going to apply that crazy logic, they never really think it all the way through to the end about the people who wouldn't be here if their parents hadn't been allowed to have an abortion.
Oh, never think about the people that had to have abortions for whatever reason or another because it was fatal to their lives. Like, this is the whole point. Like, for some people, it is literally the difference between life and death, and those people will no longer exist. And I have heard, cold, hard, factually, American right-wingers in the press say, well, you know, if that's what happens. And I'm like, that's how little you value women or people that can carry children, is that you would rather they both go than only one. Like, what logic is that?
They're such misogynists, and I think they actually get off on the idea of dead women. I think they like that. I think they love that control, that they could actually just allow us to die and have that level of control. I actually really truly believe that that is something that they get off on.
Absolutely. It's the same kind of exclusory logic about, it's the whole reason why they're so desperate. If you ask me, as someone that's not an expert in this but has a deep fascination in it, there is a reason that they're so hot on banning abortion, and that's because these people that make these laws are terrified that white people are going to end up being the minority, and they are desperate for white people to be forced to have children, to carry on having children, to outweigh this supposed erasure that's coming. And I said it to someone yesterday who was like, if we're not careful in this country, then we'll end up being the minority. And I just responded with my favorite response to that, which is, all right, what's wrong with that? A minority is treated badly or something.
Exactly. It's like the Britain first mentality. Hopefully they've all gone away now, but it's that we're going to be a minority in our country, so the women must fulfill their biological purpose and they must breed for us. for the white race. It's just absurd. I don't know how anybody could align themselves with that ideology at all. I just find it so indecent. I don't know. I just think it should be treated with the absolute contempt that it deserves. I don't think people should be tolerating these people. Don't be friends with them, don't follow them. Like, just treat them with the contempt that they deserve.
That's the only way that we are ever going to win. It's like one of the long-reaching goals that I've got for politics is that we get proportional representation. And someone said to me the other day, well, Germany's got proportional representation and they've got two far-right people sat in the Bundestag. And I was like, good. It's where they need to be. You need two people that believe in far-right nonsense sat in your parliament. So every time they're like, oh, well, what about the erasure of white people? The rest of parliament goes, you fucking stupid, shut up. And then civil debate carries on. And that's how those people need to be treated. Laugh at them.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in proportional representation. And the idea of these people getting in does worry me. But they're so ridiculous. They're too ridiculous to be taken seriously.
Absolutely.
The Scottish Family Party in Scotland, and they are absolutely ridiculous, and they've not managed to get a single seat or a single councillor elected. But I do find them quite dangerous, and actually they've teamed up with some sort of far-right influencer in Glasgow and are funding billboards to sort of campaign against sex education. Mm-hmm. So people need to realise that this is a spectrum. Even in this country, they're going to go after abortion. They're not going to stop there. They're going to go after contraception, and they're going to go after education as well. And there's a lot of mischief making and misinformation put out there about the Scottish curriculum. The Scottish curriculum, I have a lot to say about Scottish education. It's far from perfect, but the sex education curriculum is really good. It's age appropriate. You know, it's very prescribed. This is exactly what you teach at primary 5, primary 6, primary 7. But there's so much troublemaking and misinformation about what we're actually teaching children. And right-wingers saying that it's corrupting children and it's sexualizing them. And it's the complete opposite of that. The World Health Organization have lots of information that young people who get comprehensive education, actually what happens is they start experimenting at a later age than they would if they weren't properly educated. And frankly, you're not going to stop teenagers from doing anything, but what you will stop them from doing is doing it safely if they've not had the education that they need and deserve to keep themselves safe, or they won't recognise abusive situations. But really, that's what right-wingers want. You know, they want to get rid of education. They want to get rid of abortion. If you can't scream at teenage girls outside of a clinic, what can you do for fun?
Exactly. I think one of the funny things to bring up when it comes to sex education is I was in school at the end of... the nightmare that Thatcher unleashed upon people like me. I'm not even going to say the name of it, but that led to some fatal flaws in my sex education. And to my family that are about to listen to this, I'm sorry that you need to know this about me, but I was woefully uneducated about gay sex. I didn't know that it would hurt the first time. I didn't know you were supposed to use lubricant. I didn't know we were supposed to use condoms because I didn't know that HIV and AIDS were a thing. So I went out into the world at 16 because of Margaret Thatcher's ignorance, and there is every chance that I could have caught something serious that would have derailed my life at 16, because back then, the care for people who were HIV positive was nothing on what it is now. Fortunately, it's caught up. But this, like, aversion to talking about gay people, trans people, or, like, the ways to have sex that are safe for people, or, like, whether you feel X, Y, or Z is really important.
Section 28.
Yeah, Section 28. And then, like, all the stuff that you miss out on in school and education. But it's broader than that. And I think this might sound a bit wrong, but one of the problems I have that's really annoyed me with the Roe v. Wade being overturned, and I really, like, this is a bit of a controversial thing for me to say, but one of the things that has annoyed me all the way for months, whenever anything's come up about, like, these Supreme Court justices and Roe v. Wade being overturned, is so many people that are like me, gay men or whatever, the first thing they'll do is they'll be like, oh my God, they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade and that's so bad. And then they'll come after gay marriage. And I'm like, I get that that's so important, but at the same time, you've skipped over the whole... loads of people are about to lose fundamental healthcare rights. I'm not saying that it's not important, but my God, it's annoying. It's like a, now you care? Now it's your rights you care? And I think that's something that I really think that we need to work on, because it seems like there's a lot of people that only start to really show that they care or do care when their rights are suddenly up for grabs.
Yeah, and people have quite openly told me, oh, I don't really pay attention to things unless it affects me. And that needs to change. And also people need to realise that it's not affecting you yet, but it will. When one group of us starts to lose rights, it's not long before the rest of us do. But it shouldn't need to affect you. We should care about things that are affecting other people. It's kind of a bit of a flaw that we've got as well.
It's one of the things I find really funny, because it's like I've said, like, I should just be like sitting back on my platform and being like, here is a video I've duetted from someone who knows their shit, and I'll definitely need to do yours. Just prompt me, will you? But like, people like me aren't affected by this at all. I'm objectively I'm never going to have a child. I'm never going to carry a pregnancy. But I care about this so much because think of the people's lives that are going to be affected by this, not just in America, the world over. And why wouldn't you care about that?
I know, and I think that is also something that people don't realise. It's not just that it's going to affect us here. It is already affecting us here. The protesters in Glasgow, most of them have been recruited by 40 Days for Life. This is a Texan organisation, and they're funded and they're organised. The organisation that I mentioned that are going into schools, they have had massive donations from America as well. So the American far right, the religious right, they already are affecting us here. And if you look at some of the rogue groups like the SPUC, the Scottish Family Party, they are celebrating, they are emboldened, and they are thinking how they can use this to their advantage to further their homophobic, anti-women agenda. You know, they were already emboldened, and we need to brace ourselves because it is going to get worse. And the sooner people wake up to that, the quicker we can take action. I think the first thing that we need is national legislation for buffer zones. There's a private members bill going through in Scotland just now, but I just don't think it is fast enough. Today, Nicola Sturgeon tweeted the Scottish people who run the buffer zones campaign and said that I am your ally, I want the same thing. And I do believe her, but also there are pro-life zealots in her party. You know, there's the guy, John Mason, who has been to these vigils and yet he still has the SNP whip. Why is that not being withdrawn? Why is that tolerated by this party who have so much power? They can afford to lose a few, they can afford to lose some votes. They are massive. The problem with the SNP is that because, of course, the Tories do get support in Scotland. People don't want to admit it, but we're quite a small C conservative country. There is quite a lot of support for them. But so many people think, well, you know, at least they're not the Tories, or if we keep them in, we'll be safe from the Tories. And that saves them from quite a lot of accountability. It's amazing what the SNP get away with, because people will not criticise them because they think, well, this is the answer to the Tories, and it lets them away with so much. They should be held accountable as much as every other party.
I think this is the big thing when it comes to UK-wide politics. And obviously there's going to be changes in free zones and stuff like that. And, you know, I sit back and say Scotland can do what it wants as far as I'm concerned. Even if that affects us adversely, we kind of bring this on ourselves. But when it comes down to it, the thing that I look at here in Scotland, in Ireland, in Poland, in the EU itself, in America, wherever, is politics and politicians should be accountable to the people. And that's the inverse of what's happening. In America right now, 64% of people that have been polled, a huge national survey, by the way, are pro-abortion. They're pro-choice.
Yeah, and it's cross-sectional, isn't it? Because even in Republican states, most people, even if they don't like it, they would not want to take that vote, that choice away from somebody else. So even in Republican states, there's quite a lot of support for abortion as well.
That's the funniest thing, because I think what people don't like, one of the funniest, this was a few years ago now, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been Sarah Palin, was literally said on national TV during the primaries, if we make abortion rights national, then there'll be abortions all over the place. And it's like,
good.
First of all,
that's a good time.
Exactly. First of all, okay. And secondly, what? Like, just because, like, and I know that this is the most well-tread sort of thing to say, but you never criminalize abortion. You criminalize safe, legal abortion. All you're doing is pushing people to the extremes of having to travel really far or having to go to dodgy people that don't give a shit about human life, that are going to attempt to do something that might work, and it's just going to kill someone or permanently disable them or stop them from ever having children, ever, because it will sterilize them. Like, it blows my mind that these aren't just talking points. This is fact. This is factual. If you look at evidence, what happens? The original study in America when Roe versus Roe went through and it legalized abortion en masse in America, abortion rates went down because people knew it was an option.
Democrats in power.
Exactly. It's like all of these things, all of these easy to understand facts that, you know, I mean, I've done my research because I do, you know, I get called a misogynist every day by anti-trans people. Every single day.
Yeah, I get called that as well. I get called a good little handmaid for supporting trans women. They're ridiculous.
And it's like, the thing is, it really does give me a gut reaction because I'm not going to say I'm perfect. There's things that I could definitely do better. And I've done so badly by women and girls before I was more mature, before I was aware and all those things. But I'm trying my best. And it does give me a gut reaction when I get called a misogynist. But I will go to the wall for women's rights and for people that can get pregnant's rights, because it's so, so important. And it's so fundamentally easy to understand why this is so important. And all of this, like, abortions, murder and all of that, like, it's just all such transparent, emotive nonsense. And from the side that always says facts over feelings, none of the things that you say can be backed up by fact.
Yeah, and you're making me check myself. I think I have accidentally said pro-life at one point, and I try not to, because they are not pro-life. They want forced birth. And also, I think we don't need to be afraid to say that I'm pro-abortion. I've kind of got my head around that now, and I'm proudly pro-abortion. Why would I not be? It saves lives. I don't care how many they are, but as many as necessary and as are wanted. I don't care how many they are. If we, however many we need to save people and to maintain our health, that's how many we need. You know, I tried really hard not to say pro-life because there's nothing pro-life about them. Even also saying things like pro-choice, I always feel like pro-choice makes it sound a little bit trivial, as if, you know, it's like, oh yeah, what colour do you like best? What kind of ice cream would you choose? It's much more than, I don't know if it's just me overthinking it, but I think that makes it sound a little bit trivial sometimes. And what we're actually talking about is, are you going to force someone to give birth against their will or not?
I actually completely agree. And it's funny that you say that, because I saw that today, this morning on Twitter, I think it was, where someone had said, oh, come on, no, like, you know, let's, it's pro-choice, no one's pro-abortion. And someone else responded with, I'm pro-abortion. And I was like, so am I. Like, I don't actually know why I call it pro-choice, because I am pro-abortion, because it's your right. it's literally your right. It's nothing to do with me. It's your body. It's their body. I have no say. It doesn't affect me in any way. And even if I was a heterosexual and I impregnated someone and they were like, I'm going to get an abortion, of course I would have my own feelings about that, but I'm not the one that's got to walk around and deal with that. And it's draining my blood and it's draining my plasma and it's like changing my calcium levels. It's giving me postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis. It's like, it's my body that's being drained to grow something into what then becomes a life and then becomes born and then becomes a child that you've then got to raise at great expense and great time and all of that. It's like, should I have input? Why? It's not, it started out in me, it went into someone else, it's their body, their property, whatever. It's nothing to do with me at all, as far as I'm concerned. Sit back and shut up. Have your thoughts, keep them inside your head.
I know, and I'm not surprised, actually. This SNP MSP, John Mason, again replied to a constituent set for the second time, peddling the myth that NHS staff are trying to coerce people into abortion. That's nonsense. The guy, David Leach, who was doing the guy who was doing the COVID briefing every day investigated that and said there's no evidence of this. And if we look at the Turnaway study that's just been done by the University of California, actually forced birth is much more common. Coerced abortion is actually very rare. Of course, nobody should be coerced into it. You know, I believe in reproductive justice. If somebody wants to go ahead with a pregnancy, even if their situation isn't ideal, if it's what they want, they should be allowed to do that, and they should have access to the resources and the funding that they need to be able to do that. But it's very, very rare for anyone to be coerced into abortion. And hospital staff check these things. They will check. They will speak to the person on their own and say, are you sure about this? Is this what you want? Is this your choice? Is anybody trying to make you do this? They check these things. It's actually so insulting to NHS staff. And I know some midwives who I'm connected with on Twitter were very angry and insulted by that accusation. And I sympathise with that as a teacher. You know, the ridiculous things said about us. I have personally had abuse on more than one occasion because the sex education curriculum is a thing that exists. And they read the Daily Mail or the Scottish Family Party or whatever, and they're like, oh yeah, you're corrupting children, you're sexualising them, you're stealing their innocence. I really think we need to look at countries like Finland, who they're the highest attaining countries in the world for education, but also they are the most resistant to false information because they get taught critical thinking. It is a part of their curriculum. I just think it all comes back to education. To me, I guess that's why I'm a teacher. I think it is pretty much the key to everything.
I think it's like, because it's such a broad topic, but if you've followed me for any space of time, I've written a couple of articles about it on my blog where I've talked about education and I've said the regressive education system we have over here is just so useless. It's designed to, like, and I know this is going to make me sound like, you know, I'm reading from the Communist Manifesto. I don't know where I sit on that scale. I'm exploring it. But when you look at the education system in the UK, it's designed to give you functional knowledge so that you can go and write letters and you can do a bit of maths and you can work. And that's what it's there for. And, well, this is more specifically England, because I know Scottish education, as you said, is a lot more progressive and a lot more well outlined. But the problem is that that type of education only works on certain people. I think I'm really lucky. Like, my granddad made me obsessed with reading as a kid. All I did was read books. All I did was read, you know, like the Roald Dahls and the eventually J.K. Rowling's and all blah, 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 and all of that, you know, all the fictional stuff. But then I got into the factual stuff and I was like, well, this is real life stories. And so I started reading about other people and other people's existences and all of that. Education doesn't teach that, but it also doesn't teach the way that certain people learn. And this is the funniest thing. If we're going to talk about, like, the kids being born and blah, 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 you've got to look at how varied we are as people. Some people might not look at a big wall of text and absorb it in the way that I do. And that's a great skill that I've got in certain aspects. But when you can... So, like, I've got a cousin who can, like, take apart a really complicated piece of machinery and put it back together. He doesn't need blueprints or anything. If I tried that, I'd end up dead somehow. But education is like, hi, if you don't fit this prescribed way of teaching, you're screwed. And that's the problem we've got as well. Not only are we forcing people to carry pregnancies to term, but then when that child is eventually born and they're like put into an education system that completely fails them, and then the cycle propagates because they don't get educated properly, they do the same thing and the cycle just repeats. It's like, are we not meant to be trying to make life better in general? And if so, why are we not fixing the mistakes that we know are there?
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that, because I'm actually dyslexic and I'm a huge believer in reading and books, even if it's audio books. You know, we can all access books in some way. And it's interesting if you think of America, where all this that we're talking today has really stemmed from. One of the first things they did in Texas was go after books. There's a list of about 800 books that they want to ban in Texas, and they've all got kind of things in common. They're either anti-racist or they're written by LGBT authors and they have LGBT characters, or it's maybe got abortion in the book, or it's one of the books on the list is The Hate U Give. It was banned for apparently being anti-police, when actually it's telling, although it's a fictitious story, the story in that book could be a lot of young Black men's story. You know, so they start with censorship. They want to take books away from young people. And I just think that is abhorrent. If children are, it's great for children to read. If they're reading, you are winning. You know, there's no, things need to be age appropriate. There's certain things that you maybe don't want children to access when they're too young not to be hurt by. You maybe want them to access certain things when they're older. But if you look at the kind of books that are banned, it's absolutely wild. And one of the most common books to be banned is The Diary of Anne Frank. And it's not because of the Holocaust or because the themes in it could be upsetting. It's banned because there are a few paragraphs where she writes about having crushes on girls. Hmm. And that is the reason why it's banned.
I remember when they found out about those, because her father had found it and had stuck the pages where she referred to it together. And then they realised and unsealed them. And that's how they found it. And it's like, I've read it. And... like, I mean, I'm a gay man here, but like, I read it and was like, all right, cool. Anyway, and then I was reading about all of this. It's such a weird book because you're reading about all this like seeing such horror through the eyes of someone who is essentially like, you know, kind of a sort of mousy little, like, I mean, she's ballsy as fuck. And I like, she obviously, I think if she'd have grown up, she'd have been a quite cool person. But it's like seeing that kind of horror through that lens is so important. And not only are you denying that because she mentions something that a hell of a lot of people go through. I experimented with girls at one point as a gay guy, because I was like 90% sure. And then I did that and was like, I'm 100% gay. But like, it happens the other way around as well. And they'll deny not only that because of those nasty sexual experiences, but they'll deny letting them learn about such a horrific historical event, mass death, through the eyes of someone that was there and is so important and such a central figure in history. So you're denying them on two counts, denying them the ability to learn about sexuality and understand its fluidity, and denying them learning about the direct effects of something as horrific as the Holocaust.
Yeah, and it's, I think what's interesting about Anne Frank's diary is that with all these horrors going on around her, she's still a teenage girl and she still has that teenage girl experience no matter what is going on around her. Like, some of the books that they want to ban are insane, like the graphic novel Mouse, Tennessee banned that on Holocaust Memorial Day. And it's a fantastic book. And because it's a graphic novel, it's so accessible. You know, kids who maybe struggle with reading big, long texts could very easily access that and learn so much from it, because it's based on the author's dad's true story. In some of the other books they've wanted to ban, there's been books about like period education, sex education. It's just disgusting. They just want to stop children and young people from accessing the information that they've got a right to. And reading opens up the world. You know, if you read stories by, I love the book called, well, it's, at first it was called George, and then the author who wrote the book realised that it was the trans girl's kind of dead name, so they changed the book's title to Melissa, and it's about the experience of a young trans girl growing up, and it's a brilliant story. And even as an adult, it helped me to understand things that I didn't know before. Only good things can come from that.
All our experiences are linked, and as we mature and we get the barriers in our heads to understand things without it kind of, because you can, you know, like I made the mistake of reading Let's Go Play at the Adamses way too young, and that fucked me up, but like I still learned important lessons from that. But one of the things that I just find so strange is that we can all gain knowledge from each other's experiences. And there's some really seminal stuff that I've learned from having trans mates who've talked to me in really bald terms about how they feel about their bodies and everything. And it's really funny. I've not, like, not for one second in my entire life, not for one second have I ever had any questioning of my gender. I've always known 100% that I'm a man, because I fit my definition of what a man is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter that there's Americans out there, or there's English people out there, or whoever is out there that would say like, oh, he's a gay man, so he's not a proper man. I'm not their idea of a proper man, and they can keep that because I don't give a shit, but I am to a T what my idea of a proper man is. And that's where these things come in. Like, that's where this regressive understanding of gender comes from, where people will purposely conflate sex and gender. No, your gametes aren't going to change. But at the same time, if your definition is some women can have penises, then that's your definition. No one's going to change it or tell you that you're right or wrong. Because who's to say in such a massive world with like 7 billion people? Or like, my favorite thing is that, oh, well, there's no pink or blue brains. And it's like, isn't there though? Because why do you think it's not a social contagion? Like trans and non-binary and two-spirit and all these things have been talked about for like thousands of years. Just now we have it.
It's always been there.
And one of the weirdest experiences that I've had when it comes to, like, I don't want to say female experiences, but like, I worked with a woman last year, and I was like typing away, doing some work. And she came up to me, because I was the manager at the time. She came up to me and she was like, David. And I was like, yeah. And she was like, I've just come on. Am I all right to go to the bathroom? And I was like, yeah, go for it. And she walked away, and like, I carried on typing, and I literally stopped and like, just put my head in my hand and was like, why the fuck was she embarrassed to say that? Like, that's the most normal thing ever. And she was embarrassed to say it. Is it because I'm a guy? Is it because she feels some weird shame about something that her body does naturally. I was out literally. So when she came back in, I just emailed her and I was like, "Aya, just confidentially, if that ever happens again, please don't ever feel embarrassed because I'm like an adult and I know about these things and it's completely natural." And she was like, "Oh, thank God. Thank you so much. I feel so much better." But that's the kind of shit that I feel like this kind of stuff, because that only seems like a smallish thing. But to me, it's like, that's something your body does and that's completely natural. So please don't ever feel any kind of shame to talk about or acknowledge that, because it's so important that you are absolutely okay with the stuff that your body does as someone whose body does that. You should not have shame in bringing that up.
Yeah, I think, again, we need better education on these things. You know, I'm a primary school teacher, so I do teach about periods because it's age appropriate, and kids that I teach are at that age, or they're going to be at that age soon. And it's actually really sad how they've already learned stigma before we've even done the lessons. They already are embarrassed. They don't want to know about it. They don't want to do the lesson. And where have they got these messages from? You know, I need to stick to the curriculum, but I think it would be ideal if maybe the lesson started at a slightly younger age. And I think it's really important to have boys, girls, kids of all genders in the lessons so that it doesn't become this taboo, this secret thing that the boys shouldn't know about because we're all very awkward and embarrassed about it. And I think teachers quite often get embarrassed as well, but that is our problem. We need to overcome that. We cannot inflict our embarrassment onto young children who are then going to internalise that and carry that through their life. But there's such, I mean, I read Period Power by Macy Hill a few years ago, and I was like, God, I'm in my 30s and there's so much about the menstrual cycle that I just didn't know because you're not taught these things. And I think the same with menopause as well. There's so much that we don't know and that we don't understand because we aren't taught, and everybody needs to know and understand these things.
It's so, so unimportant. Like, unimportant? It's so, so important. Like, as I grew up with, my mum had breast cancer, and so because she had all of like the stuff that she had to do to get through that, it brought an early menopause, and she was quite frank with me about it a few times. And learning about that, that was one of the things that I definitely wasn't perfect when I was in school with regards to how I could be an ally to women and girls and stuff. And I just didn't know about trans and non-binary and stuff in school. The first time I knew about trans was when my friend came out to me and I was like, okay. But when it came to seeing mum going through that and her talking about what it did and how it felt and all of that, I was like, sometimes when I talk to like people that have periods and people that go through menopause and stuff like that, I listen to it and I'm like, if men went through this, the world would still be in caves, because they're just like, I know that, you know, like, it's obviously not true. Not every man's an asshole who just sits there with the thumb up their ass and stuff, but how, like, I can't imagine a lot of the men that I know, the cis men that I know, going through that kind of thing and not being a physical nightmare to be around.
I think the world would look very different. I think we would get things like period leave, menopause policies. I think the world would look very different if it was something that affected men, to be honest.
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind. And I think I still can't, there's a company in Leeds. I think it is. I'm sure it's Leeds because I read about it because it's local. And there's a company who is mandating paid period leave for their employees. And I think that's fucking awesome. And it made me laugh so much because one of my more like misogynistic typical guy friends, who I'm actually not friends with anymore, was like, "Well, I think that's nonsense. I think if they get it, then why shouldn't we?" And I was like, "Because you don't go through periods, so you don't need to." Like,
yeah, and what they find in countries and companies that do it, they find that it's not abused. People only take it if and when they need it. People aren't like, "Oh yes, I'm just going to have a week off every month." People don't do that unless they've got something, you know, really serious, endometriosis or something like that, when they can't physically work. I think some women can be quite, you know, not very open to that as well. And I think it is this fear that we fought so long for equality that will be used against us. We are still afraid, when really we should be saying, well, this affects us and we should have the adaptations made that we need to be able to thrive in the world, but we're not quite there yet. We're not at that level of thinking yet.
That's what equity and equality is, though, and that's what we should be striving for, because it, like, hands to the sky. If I was going through really horrendous, painful cramps and, like, emotional, like, ups and downs, my hormones were everywhere every single month, you could bet your bottom dollar that at least every few months I'd be like, I am not coming into work today. because I just don't know how I would handle that. And why should people be forced to? Why should you be forced to work when you feel like absolute shite? It's not fair. And you're not going to be at your best.
Penalised for it.
Exactly. Or you sat at work and people are bitching at you all day because you're not at your best. But you've been forced to be there when you're not at your best because your body's doing something that you can't freaking control. It's crazy. Like, just when you think about it in bald terms, you're just like, why are we like this? It's insane.
Patriarchy.
Very much that, yeah. I think the funniest thing about the patriarchy is how much damage it does to everyone. And yet there's so many guys who come in my comments and they'll say that I'm a pick me, and I'm like, number one, I'm gay, and number two, like, if you could see the damage the patriarchy had done to you because you're maintaining it even though it's hurting you, like, stop it.
Yeah, it does hurt men as well. That's what people don't understand, and it shouldn't need to be harming you again for you to be concerned about it, but it does hurt men. And I see the damage it does to little boys, you know, young boys who don't fit into this image of what a proper boy is like, and into football, and they don't cry, you know, there are still these things inflicted on boys, and it damages them. And boys who don't fit into that mold feel a bit out of it, a bit ostracized.
It took me years to deal with that, but that's the biggest problem, is that we maintain those systems that continue to damage us. And I feel like it's very much on us now, because there's so many people that are self-aware, we can fix it, but we just have to stop sitting around. And I think the big issue that I've got, and my fixation for the moment, because I've said this about a million times, is we're still trying to apply this like system of accountability to people that aren't letting it apply to them. And so now we have to go the next step. And I don't know what that is. And I'm not advocating violence and things like that. But what I'm advocating is for something else that works. And I you know, like I said, I just got complete. I shouldn't use the word radicalized, but I got radicalized into all of this, standing up for people that aren't me, that need people to stand up for them. And so I'm like out in the middle of nowhere going, I have no idea what to do, everyone, but what are we doing? And that's where a lot of people are. And I think we need to come to a consensus of what comes next. And I think this needs to be the cornerstone where we all stand and we say, abso-fucking-lutely not. Like, these rights are not up for debate. People are keeping them. And if you try and take them away, you will learn what happens when you try and take these rights away, and it's not good for you.
Yeah, I know. I think a lot of people are just in limbo just now. People feel a bit helpless. What can we do? What can we do? People feel helpless. But I think we need to realise that we are many and there are power in numbers. And I think even, you know, the conversations that we're having just now, people might listen to this. And I listened to a podcast a while ago, and I was looking for a podcast, and there's an interview with the woman Patsy, who was arrested at the women's vigil. And I thought, well, she's interesting. I'll listen to that and see what she has to say. And later on that podcast, they got onto the Women's Equality Party, and I thought, that sounds quite interesting. I've started looking into them, and I'm going to join them. So even just having these conversations and listening to people, it can plant these little seeds that turn into other things. Hearing about that party planted a seed in my head, and I heard about them again and thought, yeah, I'm going to look them up. I'm going to join them. First of all, I'm going to make sure that they're not some kind of anti-trans party. I need to check that out, first of all, the way things are. But after that, I thought, yeah, they sound right up my street. And you can be a member of that party and other parties as well, which also suits me.
The Women's Equality Party is amazing. And I will say it, because I'm going to try and get as many people as possible to listen to this. But as a specific aside, the Women's Equality Party are amazing. They are like pro-accessibility, they're pro-trans, they're very strongly pro-women's rights. They are absolutely fantastic. They're essentially a mass lobby group, and I think that they're going to do so much good. And everyone that I know that's in it is just the most amazing person. There's a doctor that I know that does a lot of speaking for them, and I've been following her for a while, and she's just so good. Like, she's so engaging, and she's so frank, and she's so warm, and she gives practical advice. It's like, this is the future. Like, these are the people that need to be making executive decisions, because it's not a selfish, I want to make money, I want rights for myself that other people can't have. It's, what do we do to make this world a better place? And that's the kind of stuff that we should be really getting behind now.
Exactly. These are the kind of things that we can do. And it's been so encouraging to see the popularity of the man that's leading the rail worker strike, and how popular he is, and how well he's coming across. And I think they're inspiring other people. I think people want to divide the workforce, but a lot of us are like, you know, we don't need to be pitted against train drivers. They deserve decent conditions. We deserve decent conditions. Nurses deserve it. Shop workers deserve it. I think there's been a bit of an awakening that, you know, we are all entitled to decent paying conditions, and we should fight for it. And the way that we do that is by not falling for this divide and conquer stuff that the Tories are trying to do, that we unite, that we are all workers, we are all in this together.
Exactly. That's the main thing that we need to do. And it's going to be really difficult when it comes to some of the people that have been radicalised to think that they need to be in power, that they're the best ones to be in power. And for me, it's a holistic thing. This is about all broad branch political parties all across our entire nation. They are not the ones that live our lives. We are. We know what's best for us. And the last thing that we need is to maintain this system further. We have to have real change at the base upwards, and make sure that people's very, very basic health and equality rights are protected. But not just that, that we allow people to come away from this feudalism and this tribal crap that just doesn't do anyone any good. Because I've said it before, I don't like necessarily hate Tory voters, because I just see them as mugs. Like, you're voting against your own interests. I feel sorry for them. I don't hate you. I hate the people that you elect who go into that parliament and say things like, you shouldn't be allowed to work at home, when I've been working at home for like a long time and doing the best job that I can, and it doesn't make a difference. Or saying, you need to pay more because we're in debt. And it's like, debt is theoretical. I don't give a shit. You're meant to make our lives better, and it's got nothing but worse. There needs to be change. But the main thing is that as individuals and as groups, we should all be working to look after and protect each other. And there needs to be this demystification of people that don't fit the straight, white, cis man like archetype. And that starts with having conversations like this, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And remembering that they work for us. It's not the other way around. We are not their servants. Politicians are there to represent us, the people.
Exactly. Very that.
Like the start of the show.
That's so cute. That's the main thing that people need to realise in this country. That Boris Johnson, or I mean, even Nicola Sturgeon, or like all the people who run all the parties, Keir Starmer, whatever, they do work for their job is to satisfy the will of the people. And we've had the will of the people weaponized against us for so long with crap like Brexit. And every time they do something, they're like, well, you know, we're trying to implement the will of the people, so we need to do this. The will of the people right now is that 71% want the Tories to fuck off. And the will of the people is, like, whether I like it or not, is that Scotland want to do an independence referendum. And it's not up for anybody except for the people that want that referendum to say they want the referendum. And the list spirals on. The fact is that there's people all over this country that want to enshrine abortion rights and that want to make sure that equalities are saved and that progress keeps moving forward. And the will of those people is being completely ignored in favour of rich pricks who just don't help us at all by being in the jobs that they're in. So when do we start demanding change instead of hoping for it?
Yeah, and the problem is that their friends, the Murdochs, that run the tabloids, and the power and influence that the tabloids have got. I mean, the tabloids have so much influence over who gets to become prime minister. It's frightening. And we need people to wake up to that and look at other sources of information and just think critically about what they're reading. Like, are teachers really going into school and telling all the children that they are gay and that they're transgender and getting the scalpels out and doing the surgeries herself? I mean, that is nonsense. But there are people that actually seem to think that we are doing that.
Even like, the thing that I always want to ask people who think that way is, when you were 7 years old, if someone said, you're gay, would you have automatically become gay? Because they seem to think that children are so impressionable that saying the word gay to a child makes them gay. I knew that I was gay literally from the moment I had conscious thought. I remember being 3 and fancying my mates. Now, that is a rare experience. Lots of people come to the realization when they're older. But the reason for that is because you are not taught about it. I didn't know the word gay. I didn't know what the feelings were that I was having for my friend Kevin or my friend Michael or whatever. I just knew that I liked boys and I didn't like girls. But because that wasn't taught to me, I grew up so isolated because nobody else was talking about it. Boys were talking about liking girls were talking about liking boys. And I was sat going, yeah, me too, yeah. And I grew up with crippling self-esteem issues because I thought something was wrong with me because it literally was not mentioned ever until I was 14. And my sister said something really ignorant back then, but she's like completely changed. But she said something that like literally made me be like, oh my God, I can never tell anyone. And that's the kind of misery that these people condemn gay people to, or like when they shame like anyone that has any kind of like bodily function, like periods, or if you've got PCOS and you have extremely heavy flows or whatever, you know, all these problems, you get shamed and shamed and shamed. So you don't talk about it. You carry around the depression of that. And you don't learn about pregnancy. So you have no idea how it happens. And then you do things that you don't understand. And then bad things happen. Like, why can they not see?
Yeah, and I think schools have got better, but there is still a long way to go. A lot of gay teachers are still frightened to be open with their pupils about it, you know, or you know, to even very casually say, "Oh, I have a wife," you know, as easily as I can mention my husband. There's still a lot of fear about that and about how parents will treat them. Are they going to be hounded? Because some teachers do get hounded. You know, and I talk, you know, I have like diverse books in my classroom, and we talk about, yeah, you might have two mums, you might have two dads, you might just have mum, you might have your grandparents. There's all different types of families in it. I've realised that as a cis straight woman, I've got the privilege of being able to talk openly because nobody's going to try and threaten me. You know, it's easy for me to say, oh, yeah, we need to be inclusive, but it's some of us have the privilege to be able to have these conversations, and some of us don't.
Privilege is something that we all need to acknowledge, and I try really hard, but I think that it's impossible to really ever do the job, because that's the way society brings us up, to just expect what we get. You expect the crumbs if you only ever get the crumbs. You expect, because I've said it before, the funny thing is, obviously I'm gay and I am quite obvious in my mannerisms and my voice and stuff like that, so I've been told many times. But like, I have the privilege of, when I'm at the gym, I can code shift and I can be like, excuse me, you're gonna, Mara, to borrow that after you. And I can do that and hide it. So I literally know what it's like to walk in the shoes of the most privileged people on this God's earth, which is white, cis, heterosexual men. And so I know what it's like. And it's a different world where you don't have to worry about people challenging you or people getting angry at you because of who you are. You don't have to worry about like what language you use, or if you misgender someone or anything, because it doesn't matter, because you're happy, your needs are served. And it's like, I want everyone to have that level of privilege where you just walk around on autopilot and you don't ever have to question anything. And I think when you look at stuff like this, when we're talking about basic healthcare needs being taken away, that is so distinct from that experience, because they will never understand what it's like to have their bodies legislated against so violently like this.
Yeah, and even, you know, for the most sympathetic and aware man, it is still just a theoretical concept. It's not something that they can ever experience. You know, and the privilege thing, like I do wonder what must it be like to be able to walk at night and not be worried, or to not have to carry my car keys in my hand if it's dark, or to, you know, to be able to go on a train if there's a bunch of drunk guys, not to be worried about that and thinking, oh, where could I sit? How can I get away from them? I don't know how they're going to behave. I wonder what it must be like to experience the world.
It's
And not have to worry about these things.
really funny, because sometimes guys will cop to feeling a shade of those things, and then I'm like, but that's one situation, and you don't understand what it's like if you like. I went to all the way to the other side of Leeds City Centre the other day, and I realised that my T-shirt said "Trans rights are human rights," and I was like, should I put my hoodie on just in case? Because I was afraid of getting beaten up, and then I was like, fuck no. Like, but this is the world that we live in, where you put a simple statement on that's like, hey, these people deserve human rights, and then you're worried about getting beaten up. It's absolutely insane. And it's even worse for women or feminine presenting people, or just, oh my God, the experiences of people that don't match up to the gender binary are insane. I have a friend who's very, very non-femme presenting, and honestly, every single time I see her, I'm like, you all right? She's like, oh, I nearly got beaten up the other day because I tried to use a women's bathroom at a restaurant and someone challenged me. And I'm like, fuck me, is this a world that we're living in?
Oh, I know, and this is where it's heading. I mean, do we really want to get into a world where people are like wanting you to prove your gender before you go into a toilet? I think it's disgusting. And I keep saying to people, you have probably shared toilets with trans women and you've never known. And you don't need to know, because what's up someone else's skirt is none of your business. Just live and let live. If someone's not bothering you, what is the problem?
I've said, like, I'm so tired of having the discussion of, like, because they'll be like, oh, well, you know, like, what if they're pervy? And I'm like, what if they are pervy? What if I share a bathroom with a pervy gay guy? Like what's going to happen because we are sharing spaces with other human beings. Nothing to do with their gender or their sex or their sexuality. Sometimes people are pervs. The worst, like some of the worst, like I've been through some real shit when it comes to other men, but some of the worst non, like really horrific, could literally be done for legal stuff things that have been done to me are by straight men. Like I went out in drag a few years ago because it was like a fancy dress party, and this guy, I knew his first name, and I'd said hello to him about three times, came up to me and grabbed my genitals through my dress, and I was like, what the hell are you doing? And he went, just check in, ha ha ha, and walked off. And I was like, what just happened there? And that's the normalization of like, I need to write an article about this because I've been really interested in it for a while. But that was, David's presenting feminine, so I've got the right to touch his body. I could sexualize him because he's dressed like a woman. That was
Yeah,
what that
and I think
was.
it lets the perpetrators of real crime off the hook because trans women are not likely to be the ones committing crimes against cis women. If anything, trans women are more vulnerable to having crimes committed against them. So I think a lot of this actually suits, you know, the demographic that commit most crimes against people. It lets them off the hook because it's another scapegoat because everybody's too worried about trans women to look at who is actually responsible for the violence against women. You
When
know,
you
you think of
actually.
all the cases lately, all the women that have been murdered, you know, the woman that was murdered by the police officer, you know, it's not trans women that are doing these things. It's not them.
It's like the way that I always say it is, of course, there might be some pervy people in the trans women demographic, but there's also pervy people in the cis women demographic and the gay man demographic and the straight man demographic and the trans man demographic because pervy people exist. And there's not a higher incidence rate. And if there is, then that's something that we can address, but there isn't. There's a lower incidence rate. But the main thing is that really annoys me as a man, as a cis man, is that the people that are always doing the things like legislating against women's bodies or trying to blame transgender women or whatever, it's always cis men at the end of the day. If you follow the trail, it always leads back to some mysterious, shadowy bank of men who want to make decisions about how women should be, what bodies should look like, how we should use our bodies, bodily autonomy, and all that. And it's like, when do we stop giving in to that? Because the problem is it's originated from them, but it's propagated by people that just give in to it out of this sense of like, well, better not question it. Someone said that trans people are bad, so I better just follow it. But
Yeah,
wake
if it's in
up.
the Daily Mail, so it must be true.
Exactly. It's absolutely insane. And I think, it's like I say, I think the best thing that the only way that we can turn what's happening right now into something that's like a seminal moment is to literally plant our staffs and say, there will be no more. You are not gonna. We're rolling this back, first of all. But if you think you're coming after everybody's rights en masse so that you people are the only ones that have any semblance of a comfortable life, try it. And see what happens, because I think that's where we're headed at now.
Yeah, I think the right to bear arms is an interesting one in America because it's apparently to protect people from a fascist state where women are now living under a fascist state.
Exactly. So let's see how many people take up arms. Thanks for listening to Politically Enraged, a podcast designed to discuss politics palatably. If you're interested in following us on social media, you can find me at Davy Moo pretty much everywhere. And you can also find us on Instagram at Politically Enraged, where you can see the blog. You can find us on Ko-fi in case you'd like to caffeinate me. And you can find us on Twitter at Political Rages. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, stay politically engaged and get politically enraged. Because remember, we deserve better.